when you're pushing that gun, you're asking it to go the extra fucking inch. When you're asking that gun to just go a little further, okay, the more efficient gun is going to get there. It just is. Mm-hmm. You know, like when the gun is dirty or it's dry or your gas rings are worn or there's debris in the raceway or there's other things going on, or it's negative 20 degrees outside and, you know, you test fire your gun at, you know, 80 degrees, you know, like ambient temperature. When you start stacking these variables into that weapon, okay, the more efficient gun is going to push further. It just is. You don't shoot, you don't test something, or you don't come up with a formula based upon getting it to work at some static range under ideal conditions, right? You're thinking of what the gun's going to do when the chip's truly down, when everything's gone to shit and there's a real problem, or you're pushing that gun to its outer edge of its performance envelope. Okay, that's what you're paying for. When you buy a better rifle, you're paying for that last 5%. The last 5% of the performance envelope, that's what you're buying.
Cool.
We appreciate y'all taking the time for us today on this nice, chilly November day. December, actually, right?
Yes, December 1st.
December 1st, man. Yeah. I'm glad y'all are here. This is awesome. Have you been here before?
No, this is my first time.
Oh, well.
I've seen the bathroom twice.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to the Big Tech's Ordnance Podcast. We're joined here today with Kyle and Mike Mitsubishi from Sons of Liberty Gunworks. Those of you watching here on YouTube may notice we're not in the pod lab today. We're here on location in lovely San Antonio here at the Sons of Liberty Gunworks headquarters. So, Mike, Kyle, thanks for having us out. And I guess,
no, we're stoked to have you here, man.
Yeah.
It's good.
Good weather.
Yeah,
you picked the coldest day.
Picked the coldest day. 44 degrees, and my feet are cold.
Yeah, my feet are cold, too. I have the breathable Adidas on.
Nice.
They're just,
that was a bad choice.
Yeah, it was not a wise one. Kyle.
Just started a fire out here.
Yeah, we have the fire pit right over there. We should kick that off.
Should I get Bernie out here to start a fire?
Make it happen. Make it so. We can move the equipment. It's cool.
Yeah, we'll sit around a little campfire.
We have a smoke machine out here.
Kyle, Mike. If you want to tell us a little bit about yourself, kind of your background, how you got started, and then we'll roll into all that.
Yeah, I'm Kyle, Kyle Grothues, and co-founder with Mike over here. And my background is primarily in business guns. You know, we've always loved guns, and me and Mike were introduced by a mutual friend he's a good dude. He's a good dude. And I haven't talked to him in it's been years, actually. We wanted to make guns, you know, build awesome guns, and you know, I never expected it quite this big. I'm glad it did, and yeah, that's kind of where we're at.
Yeah, it's been a cool ride to kind of watch y'all, because we kind of all came up at the same time, but, you know, started similar times, and yeah, it's definitely been crazy, and it's been really cool to watch y'all just literally explode and just, you know, take over.
Yeah, if you were to look at it in hindsight, it's kind of funny how it worked out. There's no way you could have planned this, like us just serendipitously meeting. Like through a random friend, us being so different, like Kyle and I are the yin yang, and anybody that knows us knows that, like, we are, we're very different in our approach to things. The one thing we have in common is our hatred for losing. We're both like super aggressive competitors, you know? So like that's our common ground. And so when we align on that, we're pretty damn hard to beat. You know, my background was, kind of a nomad, skydiving, gambling, shooting pool. I think Sons of Liberty is the first real job I've ever had. So yeah, it's kind of funny how it worked out. Like I said, if you look at the trajectory, there's no possible way you could have ever planned something like that. It's just things kind of fell in, and it feels almost, you know, divine, you know, how it worked out. And it's been a blast, dude.
I mean, y'all really started like basically building guns in the basement of the lumber yard, right?
No AC, no heat, no nothing. It was really cold there today.
Yeah, so I was building guns out of my garage, and before Kyle and I met, and then that was kind of what got me into my background. You know, kind of got me started into the industry side of things. Will Larson was a mentor of mine. You know, rest in peace, Will. That guy had his hand in a lot of companies. I don't know if people realize how much influence Will had. You know, BCM, Forward Controls, Centurion. You know, he obviously ran Psyonix. I mean, like, Sons of Liberty wouldn't be here without, you know, Will. So I started, you know, with taking some of his instruction, I started building guns in my garage, got a visit from the ATF, and I was like, hey, you better go get a license and you know, luckily they didn't shoot my dog. And
right.
So around the same time Kyle and I met, he had a open spot in a lumber yard, and I knew how to turn a wrench, and together we here we are.
Yeah, the first gun I built, actually, AR, I think I built myself, actually got stolen out of my truck, and Bear County actually called me a couple months ago, and they're like, "Oh, we found it. You know, it's down here in the evidence locker." And I'm like, "I don't know if I want it back. Like, it was pretty bad. You know, like the first one I built like 15 years ago. I'm like, yeah, I think I'd be embarrassed by it now." I'm
yeah,
like,
you don't want to show that off.
Yeah, I don't think you just keep it. Yeah.
Just keep it.
No, sir, wrong serial number. That one's not mine.
We'll end up getting it back when we buy their evidence guns back one day.
Yeah. So when did y'all start? Was it 2014?
So I'm actually a little bit disappointed. We missed our birthday. Our birthday was actually November 27th.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so we're going to have to cut something for that soon. But, yeah, November 27th is whenever serial number one rolled off the line. Now, so 2014 is whenever we officially started. And, like, we were in business for about 7 months, maybe, before we actually built the first gun. I consider the birth of Sons Liberty when serial number one rolled off the line, right? But before that, we were still servicing weapons. We were still building guns, upper halves, you know, doing that stuff. So, yeah, I mean, 8 years. Mm-hmm. 8 years a couple days ago.
Yeah.
There's a few guns out there on those original lowers that weren't really ours yet.
On the Arrow ones?
Yeah, yeah, I know a few people. There's only 50 of those. I know a few people that have them. And it has, like, our logo, but I hand drew it. and lasered on the side. And I know a couple of people that have them. I'm like, we will buy them back. Like, don't ever sell it. Like, we'll just trade you for a new one.
Dude, I had a gun come through here for service that I built in my garage.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah, and wow. I offered the guy, I said, I will just give you a completely new gun. Like, I will upgrade that thing. I was like, I would like that back. He's like, no.
Shit. Give it 20 years, he'll pay off his mortgage with that.
I'm like, yeah, this is cool. One of the Mitsubishi specials. Like, this is where they were watching me and tapping my phones. I learned something interesting. So when the ATF asks you a question, they usually already know the answer. And if people don't think that there's a registry, let me just tell you. Whenever they sat me down, they had a – and they were asking me about, you know, building guns. They had every 4473 I had ever filled out in my life.
Oh, holy shit.
Yeah. I remember buying a Barrett when I was 20 years old, like, you know, an M82. And I was probably 32 at the time that they sat and talked to me, maybe 33. And they had that 4473 from that Barrett. So I'm like, if you're on the list. We're on the list.
Yeah.
You're on the list.
I'm on a list.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure my latest audiobook put me up a couple layers on that list too.
Oh shit.
Yeah, reading some like urban guerrilla warfare stuff. So that's going to escalate that a little bit.
Do you follow Andy NGO at all?
No.
So he's like a freelance reporter, and like he's devoted his career to kind of like reporting on Antifa. And he publishes a lot of stuff on Twitter, which is he's allowed to now. You know, it's kind of lifted the veil. And it's anyways, he publishes all their tactics and stuff. It's very interesting. These people should go look at that. There's some actual organization and training in there that I don't think just manifested in someone's mom's basement, you know.
Oh yeah, I mean they're legitimate terrorist group at this point.
Oh yeah, no, yeah. For sure. With training and organization,
yeah, help and people that know what they're doing.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Like Portland, you know.
Yeah,
there was some organization there, or to an extent.
Oh no, but like,
yeah,
bringing leaf blowers to blow the gas back. I mean, all sorts of crazy things they come up with. Umbrellas for the pepper balls, I guess. Like, you know, it's all sorts of crazy stuff.
Which brings the conversation back before we get way off into the weeds on this.
We can edit that out.
No, no, it's staying in because this segue is really good into what we've got hanging up right there, Sons of Liberty. How'd you go? I mean, we're talking about the start of it. How did you determine that that was your name? That's what you wanted to be your name. Did you were like, I want to be like, this is the... I'm not going to say extreme right wing side of it because it's not, but how is that the image that you decided for and to go with your brand?
Actually, my bro Glenn came up with the name. We were sitting out in San Diego and, you know, I knew I wanted to get into the gun business. We were kind of looking at, you know, what that would look like. And, you know, he picked the name and we're both huge fans of American history. And unfortunately, like a lot of that a lot of that history is completely lost upon people. People ask me every day, what do those five stripes mean? What does that mean? What does that mean? And it's disappointing that that stuff is not, people should know that. You would think that like the way that you learn history, like that would be common knowledge. It's not. But obviously the Sons of Liberty were the descendants of the Loyal Nine, you know, which was a kind of a loose knit organization, like in the 1760s that were opposed to, the crown, opposed to taxes and tyranny and occupation, all that kind of stuff. And they were very vocal. Some would call them terrorists, you know, but they were certainly pushing back against that. And then the Sons of Liberty, obviously, you know, Paul Revere, Sam Adams, Ben Franklin, you know, it fit. And at the time that, we picked the name, this was right after kind of like we kind of were forming the idea after the Sandy Hook shooting, right? And kind of going into that, there was a huge push to ban guns. I think that you saw a much more dramatic political shift at that time. Things went from being, I think, civil to being more adversarial in that time. And so it was definitely
A turning point.
Definitely, yeah. Something fundamentally changed in the country around that time. So we decided to roll with that as kind of we wanted it to be a brand that stood for something, not just high-end performance rifles, not just endurance rifles, but also a message about fundamentally who we are as Americans and what we believe, you know, and what the final option might be.
I think the whole history aspect of it is pretty cool. Like, you incorporate that pretty well all throughout, like, your brand. I mean, you have the Rebellious Stripes, the Loyal Nine. Yeah. We're in the Green Dragon Tavern South, you know, like, right here that's the name of their bar right here. You have a lot of really cool ways of tying that in. And even on the return labels from the packages that we get.
Yeah. You know, changing the names, yeah.
Yeah, every week it's coming, or every month, or how often we change it?
I think you can change it every week or two.
So if you look at the return labels on the packages, it's coming from the original, you know, the OG Sons of Liberty.
And there's a lot of really cool ones, too, that you don't know, but you should look up some of the names that are on the packages, because there's a lot of them, like, you're like, I don't know who the hell that is, but you look them up, and they're like, did some badass shit, you know, like, they would have got the Medal of Honor now for, like, the badass stuff that didn't exist back then, but...
And then on you took the – in Loyal Nine Manufacturing is the actual – is that the parent company?
It's the legal entity.
It's the legal entity, right?
Yeah. So just a quick little tidbit about branding for anybody that wants to go into the gun business. Sons of Liberty Gunworks, because we had gun in the name, we were immediately limited to – like, we were automatically flagged by credit card processors, by Square, by website hosting places – by a lot of stuff, right? So L9 Manufacturing, as we grew and we were, you know, having to circumvent this bullshit, right? You know, the thumb that the gun industry is under, Loyal Nine Manufacturing still sticks with the core theme and value of who we are, but it sounds more sterile and probably doesn't raise as many flags. And we're trying to sneak past some fucking Google ban.
Right.
So yeah, L9's the parent company. Sons of Liberty is our public facing outward brand.
Yeah, we use the Loyal Nine a little bit on. You'll see on some of the Loyal Nine lowers actually say it on the side instead of Sons of Liberty. We use it a few places. But.
Hi, I'm Chris from Big Tex
Ordnance, and I'm Ian from Big Tex
Ordnance. And today we've got the weekly update. So first off, from Voltor is the classic Murr upper receivers, right? So we've got them in foliage green, black, standard black. Those were my picks. What do you got over there?
For all the wheel gun enthusiasts out there, we've started carrying some Safariland Comp 3 and Comp 2 speed loaders for J frames and K frames. So if you guys need a good speed loader for all of your revolver needs, we got some. We have the new Streamlight Wedge XT also. These come in black and FDE. Great little task light. You know, drop your keys underneath the couch. You're looking for your burrito. Good little option from Streamlight. Comes with a little lanyard on it as well.
Solid price point on those. I'll have to reference the price point on
USB-C
those.
USB-C rechargeable, and it has a deep carry pocket clip on it.
Yeah, so option.
Looks great.
Coming up, there's a bunch of classes. We've got Paradox Training. Be across the street at the range.
doing that the 27th, not this weekend, but next weekend. Anyway, lots of training events coming up. We just also posted the Sons of Liberty.
Oh, yeah, the Armors
class in May. It's up on the website. Anyway, thanks for watching.
Be safe.
Finger guns.
Yeah, we actually had a customer issue with a Sage Blaster, right? We sent out a Sage Blaster. Customer emails back. I thought this was a Sons of Liberty gun. This is not a Sons. Where's my Sage Blaster? Like, dude, it's a Loyal 9 lower. It's a Sons of Liberty. I don't want it.
Somebody needs to punch his history teacher right in the balls. I don't, because of the Loyal 9 was a Sons of Liberty.
Like, they're like, hey, Josh, you know, our ATF guy comes in to the office and he's like, hey, this guy wants to send this blaster back. It's never been out of the FFL. You know, what do you want to do? I was like, somebody else will buy it.
Yeah, there's a wait list. We have like 500.
Send it back. It's cool.
Don't worry about it. Sage guns, you never worry about it.
No.
Yeah. And I've also learned that for our approach to customer services, we never argue with anyone, dude. It's just, what can I do to make you whole right now? Okay, good. That's just the simplest way to do it. I read some of the customer service emails that people post from like other entities, not just the gun industry, I'm just in general, and you see like someone arguing, I'm like, I don't know how much time you wasted and how many people you've angered, but that was
nothing good comes out of it. There's no good resolution for it, and then all you do is just waste time. It's easier just, how do we make it right? Let's do that, boom. Yeah. Be done with it.
All right, are you happy? Good. Here's a sticker. Here's a hat.
Here's a hat. Here's a sticker. Here's a gift card.
Yeah.
Merry Christmas.
Everyone ends up a lot happier that way.
Yeah,
save some sanity too.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, don't get me wrong. There are you do come across some people, and the bigger you grow, the more it happens. Right, when you cast a bigger net, you're going to catch some weirder fucking fish. There are some people that do not want to be happy. You know, they you know, and like on that kind of thing, we'll go pretty far out of our way to try to make that thing whole. But you know.
Some people you can't help.
No, some people don't want to be helped.
They don't want to be helped.
There's a book out there called, it's like, No Customer Service is the Best Customer Service, and it's basically like, you don't need customer service if you don't fuck up. I'm like, what world do you live in? How'd you write a 200-page book about this? Like, that's not the real world.
Yeah. We fuck up all the time. Or not all the time, but it definitely happens.
Yeah, like, it's sub 1%. It's sub 1%, and we're pretty happy with that. But, man, like, you know, we're seeing some issues come out. We're just right off of Black Friday. So if you're listening to this show, we're recording this December 1st. So we're still within, you know, 5 days of Black Friday. And so now we're getting like, oh, you sent me a PLHV2 rather than an OKW. Yeah. Okay, cool. Like, and then now there's 10. And I'm looking at here. I'm like, I'm sorry, there's 10. He's like, well, dude, there's 1,800 orders that went out. Like, it's
that as a percentage is
it's not cool.
It's not about your mistakes. It's about how you fix it. And you know,
Some of our most loyal customers are guys that some of the guys that you know are truly, you know, loyal to the brand. They were people that we kind of fucked something up with. So like, you know, we shipped the wrong color hat. So I got the wrong color hat. Cool. Keep it. Give it to a friend. Here's the right color hat. And you know, sorry about that.
I remember one of the first customers we had an issue with. Like it was like before the first lower even came out. He wanted a rail. I can't remember what brand of rail. I think it was BCM, whoever it was, because we didn't have our own at the time. And it was like, I want a 15-inch of this rail. And we're like, yeah, sure. And we sold to him. They went back and looked. And we're like, fuck, they don't even make a 15-inch. And he's like, well, give me one. I'm like, it doesn't fucking exist. Like, we can't. Like, I don't know what to tell you.
That was a weird evolution for us, too, is like when you're very first starting out, you say yes to everything, like, you know,
because
I mean, like, yeah, let's do it. You have this, and then as you grow, you have to kind of be a little bit more responsible as to what you're willing to do, because you eventually, you know, if you try to make everybody happy, you're going to make nobody happy. Just stick to a few core things, and that's why there's been a lot of neat stuff that we've wanted to do. I mean, like, you know, we came very, very close to, you know, building AKs.
Oh, holy shit.
No, we I don't know. This is open source.
Been long enough, yeah.
So, I mean, like, Jim Fuller and we were in talks about, you know, partnering on doing something like that. I think that would have been awesome.
That would have been amazing.
Amazing, yeah. I think it goes Kalashnikov Fuller.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that would have been like the equivalent of like getting, you know, like Stoner or something.
Well, now I'm disappointed. I want a Jim Fuller Sons of Liberty AK.
It was that time when the parts kits and the parts are really drying up. So it was either like, there was no going small. Like, we would have had to gone hard. Yeah, like,
we were going
made
all
our own
in.
Like American made like parts, and like really had to go full balls deep into it.
And how we had that, we're talking to who I think is, you know, truly one of the true authorities on, you know, the AK platform. We looked at that situation. This was kind of also when some of the rush was, you know, was starting to kind of ramp up a little bit. And again, we had to make that decision, like, okay, dude, what are you good at? And like, we're really, really good at the M4. Mm-hmm. And like, in right now, our entire, all of our effort has to be directed to that, because like, we have a demand that is probably impossible to satisfy. You know, I mean, like, if we were to really look at forecasts and stuff, we're probably sold out for 40 months or something on stuff, right? So opening up an entirely new manufacturing vector, I think, would have taken away some of the, you know, some of the horsepower from what we're truly good at.
Yeah, and you look around, and there's a lot of gun companies out there that either are really good at making pistols and they decide to make ARs, or they're really good at making ARs and they decide to go make bolt guns, and it usually doesn't work out. And it's like, just, you know, sticking to what you're good at is why everyone's like, why don't you make a Glock? It's like, because everybody else makes a Glock, and that's not our thing. And it's like,
because I don't really know how. Yeah. You know, like, I could not teach a Glock armorer's course. The M4, I got you covered, but I can't, you know, I couldn't tell you how to, you know, build a Glock.
Yeah.
So.
And you travel all over to do the armorer's course, right? So somebody who's not familiar with your brand, I know we host you, what, quarterly? We have you up
at
every
least quarterly.
Every 3 to 4 months to teach at BTO training facility. But you go all over the country.
Yeah, I probably do about 30, 35 classes a year. I mean, so that's, I mean, I'm gone more than I'm home.
And yeah, it's moving.
Yeah, and I mean, I've trained well over 1,000 armorers at this point, and it's an actual certification that's usually accredited by the state in which I'm teaching. Like, it's a TCOL cert, you know, in Texas, or SLED, or POST, or wherever I'm teaching to. And I bring that up only because the class is, it would stand up to scrutiny under, you know, if you had to testify as to why, you know, you did this. So, I mean, I think it's probably one of the best M4 armorers courses out there, because it's not so much like a how-to. I mean, I can teach a monkey how to install a barrel nut, but like, do you know why, you know, you use this anti-seize? Do you know why you season those threads? Do you know why we stake in this many places? Do you know why we use this material? Why this gas port? Carrier speed management, blah, 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 blah. And it's, you know, most people go into that class thinking they have a, you know, pretty solid grasp on the rifle, and they leave the class realizing there was a lot more to it than what they thought. And I mean, we teach military, you know, CADM guys and small arms repair and, you know, LE and real civilian enthusiasts. We teach industry guys, and it's a lot more, there's a lot more to it, you know, than I think people get.
And one thing I like about it is it's not a Sons of Liberty armorer's course. It's an M4 armorer's course. So it's not just a sales pitch for why Sons of Liberty is the best and why you should only buy their product. No. It's a legit showing what the platform is, what it can do, why certain things are important. And it's very, very informative. I've taken it, you know, a handful of times, and every time I pick up on something different.
Yeah, I mean, I talk about my competitors in that class. I mean, I use BCM and Knights and LMT and Psionics and Centurion and, you know, Nevesky. I use brands that I respect as performance brands. I use them kind of to discuss some of these concepts, or I use the actual TM or the actual TDP, because I don't want it to feel like a product push. I want it to be a true standards push. Like, the reason why we do this isn't because Mike Mahalski pulled it out of his ass. Like, we do this because we have 60 years of collective data on this, and, you know, and people kind of, here's the frustrating thing, like the term mil-spec is one of the most bastardized terms in the industry, and people really don't know what it means. Like, even recently when I post certain technical information, you'll have people comment on this, and I realize just how uninformed that is. Like, people have to remember, like, there's no sample size of rifles that have... You're talking about sample sizes of millions and round counts of billions in every austere condition that rifle's ever been deployed to, whether you're a 17-year-old ASFAB waiver or you're a Delta Force operator, and we have a lot of data on why military rifles actually work and why premature failure is anomalous on certain components, why the guns work suppressed or unsuppressed without the need for adjustable anything. You know, why the guns are able to run in those austere conditions after they're covered in debris and mud, whatever. So, you know, I'm not saying that we can't exceed the mill standard. We do. That's the whole point. My job is to increase the lethality of the platform, and we want to incrementally keep pushing that bar up. But you have to at least know where the floor is. You have to know where to start. And I would argue, and this will piss people off, I would argue that 95% of guns on the commercial market would not meet the basic mill standard. It just would not. Materials, techniques, be able to pass certain some, you know, objective firing schedules, you know, it would not be able to do it. 95% of the ARs out there would not meet that standard.
And you get a lot of guys that are in the military, like, oh, my Beretta, my rifle is like, oh, it's all messed up, and it, you know, rattles, and man, this thing's a giant piece of shit. I'm like, it's 30 years old and it still works.
Mm-hmm. Like, it's probably had like 70,000 rounds.
Yeah, more. You know? I've been in military armories where you can see, you know, M16 like. You know, engraved over, and it says M16A1. That's been engraved over. Then M16. I mean, like, that receiver's been in service, you know, since the 70s. You know, I mean, so a lot of this technical nuanced data is lost on the majority of the gun buying population, and most people can't tell you why behind any of it, and that's kind of where we're trying to push into there. If nothing else, my contribution to the industry will hopefully be to raise the bar on what the standard is.
I think we've already done that. I mean, even over the years, I mean, people just know a lot more. I mean, than we did 10 years ago. Nobody knew, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Nobody taught gas ports 10 years ago.
No. I've seen a lot of people adopt our stuff. I mean, I can see the impact that we've had. Whether we get credit for it or not, it's a different story. But I mean, I can clearly see people adopting some of our warranty package. Where, hey, you shoot a barrel out, we give you a free one. Hey, you do, you know, you shoot someone in a defensive shooting, we'll give you a free gun while it's in evidence. Nobody did that before us. Nobody. We did this from day one, from 8 years ago. You know, no one did that before us. Now it's starting to catch on, which is great. Guess who benefits, man? The end user, the Americans.
Yeah, raises the whole industry up.
Yeah, and I'm proud to have, I think, helped drag. Drag some of our peers with us, dude. That's true. We really did that.
and the bottom line, when it comes down to mil spec,
the fucking thing must work. And that's true. This is the opening slide of my armorer's class is the fucking thing must work. And then the caveats into any modification done to the weapon at the expense of reliability should be avoided or ... explained. There are times where you may have to make a certain modification to the weapon in order to fit some extremely niche task. But I want people to be able to articulate why they've stepped off the path. Like, not just because it looks cool or not because of, you know, someone handed you a really cool brochure. I want you to be able to explain exactly why you've stepped off the path. And there are times whenever you articulate that answer and it makes sense. We have, we've had some interesting folks come through here from different, you know, entities and units, stuff like that, and you'll see some of the stuff on their rifles, and you ask why, and they'll tell you, well, because whenever you jump out of a fucking airplane, it stows to your body better in this configuration. I'm like, okay, that makes sense. Like, that's a good answer. You know, or you talk to EP guys that have to put a rifle in a very small package. Okay, that makes sense. That's a good answer. But for a lot of stuff, you see gizmos and gadgets that don't belong on the gun. You know, and they're like, why'd you do that? Like, it's fucking cool, dude. But, I mean, that's fine. That's a good reason, too. Just, you know, just be honest.
Be aware of that.
Yeah.
What's been the biggest challenge that y'all have had, you know, scaling at the scale that y'all have over the past 8 years? Because I know for us, it kind of started off slow, and then we started to gain traction, and then all of a sudden, it just, like, you know, straight up trajectory. And from the outside looking in, that's kind of looks like...
I would think one of the biggest ones we've had we've done a pretty good job with it, but once the more and more people you have, like, that, it's training them, because the, you know, and it was just me, him, and Dylan, like, we would just go sit down and be like, all right, we got to do blah, blah, blah. But now we have boys in, like, six states, you know, we've got, you know, almost 40 guys working here and making sure they stay up on the training, and it's not like, well, this is how I always did it when I was an armor in the air. Like, no, you got to do it our way. Yeah, keeping up with the training, make sure everybody's on the same page is always tough the bigger you get. So,
yeah, we've never hired based on experience or resumes. We hire based on personality and chemistry.
Like, 100%.
It's my job I do this professionally, is teach people how to build guns. So I can teach you
how to build. You got that covered.
I got that covered. I can teach you how to build a gun from the ground up, but I can't teach you how to be cool. And I can't teach you how to have thick skin. I can't teach you how to give a shit. You know, I can't teach you how to, you know, believe in something bigger than you. Because that's what we do. That's one of the things that I think resonates with people that are familiar with us, is that it's not just a rifle company. I believe it's a cause, you know, arming people with fighting guns. And all of our guys, nobody's here to punch a clock. People believe in the cause. I mean, look at our activism, look how much time we spend actually on the other side of that is the message. The hardest thing for us, I think, in scaling though too, is, you know, any issue that you see, whether it's inventory management, whether it's logistics, whatever, those just keep getting magnified. And nobody can plan. No company plans for doubling, tripling, or quadrupling, you know, year over year. You can't plan geometric growth because it's so unheard of. Mm-hmm. And trying to manage that, it never, I believe that we currently build the best rifles we've ever built as a company today. The quality of the rifle, like, you know, incorporating FCD Castle nuts as opposed to the USGI we used to use. You know, I think like the rails we're using now are the strongest rails we've ever used. You know, like, I mean, so I think the rifles we build today are the finest iteration of anything we've ever built. That's typically not true of companies when they scale. Mm-hmm. Typically, the guns they build.
Oh, yeah.
At the top of their growth are not as good as the guns they built when they were first coming up. This is true. There's a golden age of almost every rifle company where things were performance-driven, then they start to become margin-driven, efficiency-driven, right? We didn't do that. We've actually gone the opposite way, and I'm proud of that. You know, I'm very – but that's a fucking challenge.
Oh.
You know, when you go from building 100, you know, guns, you know, every couple months to, you know, that sometimes, you know, you're cranking, you know, about 100 rifles a day, you know, or more, depending on, you know, what we're working on. So managing that and keeping that QC, it's a lot of work, you know.
Oh, yeah. And that, you know, when there's a lot of things that people don't realize, that where we're at growth technology-wise and when we're scaling at an exponential rate, we've seen this in our business that drives over to you. During the height of the pandemic, y'all would send us 25 Sage Blasters, and we'd put them up on our website, and our website crash. And everybody's like, fix your website. Your website sucks. I'm like, there is not a system designed right now, currently, to handle 1,000 people doing the same thing on your website.
It happens to Geisley every year, you know?
It's like our website... There's not a product on Amazon that 1,000 people are checking out right now. It doesn't exist.
Yeah.
And it just, people don't understand the scalability. And that's as simple as a click here button, not, you know,
and not building it
hundreds and hundreds of guns.
No. I mean, again, like, you know, the issues you see, not, you know, we talk a lot about the rifle building, because like at the end of the day, it's like the Marine Corps, you know, every Marine's a rifleman first, right? Well, I mean, like every Sons of Liberty employee is an armorer first, you know, before they go off to customer service or Cerakote or shipping or whatever. I mean, for the most part, they're armorer trained before they ever go do anything else. That's our core thing. So we focus a lot on the rifle building, but that's like 10% of the actual... The job, you know, the levels of emails, questions, phone calls, people like, you know, I do see sometimes complaints where like, hey, I didn't, you know, someone didn't get back to me in time. I'm like, they got back to like 300 people today. And like, I'm sorry that like yours might have not gotten responded to, but like, you know, they trying to manage all that. Our guys are, when we first started out, our guys were very good at turning wrenches. Guys that are really good armorers aren't always the best at being very good at emailing. So having to build around that and keep building and scaling and beefing that machine up, that's tough.
Yeah, the support, the back end side of it is always the part a lot of companies struggle with. A lot of things, even look at the military. There's a reason why the U.S. military is so good. I mean, it's because all the logistics and we can come to you and fight you. You know, it's like, but you look at, you know, the military from Kenya or some shit. I mean, yeah, we've got a bunch of guys with guns, but I mean, they don't have any cooks or truck drivers.
Well, the Russian military was out of gas.
Yeah, you know, like, exactly.
In a bordering country, right? You know, like, so there's no support personnel. Well, it's the same thing for us. I mean, you have purchasing, shipping, you know, customer service, app, marketing, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, and all of that goes into, like, one rifle. You know, all of that is why one rifle can go out the door.
It's like the tip of the iceberg, you know? No. I mean, you see the rifle, but there's all this support that's underneath it. That
yeah, I think most of the people we've hired recently have all been purchasing, you know, counting, you know, customer service, that sort of stuff. And it's very important. I mean, that's mostly what we got the rifle building down. I mean, a lot of the meetings we have is on all the other crap that goes into making sure they
all
go out the door.
All the boring stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you talked about it earlier, the warranty that y'all have on, like, if you shoot out a Sons of Liberty barrel, replace for free. Can you touch on that a little bit?
Yeah. So whenever we, again, when we very first started the company, this is 8 years ago, and we're looking at stuff, we really wanted to have legitimate data-driven empirical information, right, to be able to tell people. Like, this is empirically what you are getting. There's to where there's no, it's not controversial. This is it. Like, this is, here it is, you know, very open. And I was surprised because there were certain doctrinal things that surprised me. Predicting barrel life is spooky. It is, I would say it's impossible. Like, from what we saw, a 16-inch barrel made of a certain material would last slightly longer in terms of group size than a 10.5-inch barrel of the same material, same process. You know, a longer barrel seemed to maintain groups longer than a shorter barrel. A suppressed barrel, okay, it seemed to have a little bit shorter life than an unsuppressed barrel. Looking at different firing schedules, looking at, you know, all this kind of stuff, trying to define what barrel life even is. Is it group size? Is it standard deviation in muzzle velocity? Is it a drop muzzle velocity? Is it throat erosion? Is it port erosion? You know, you start looking at all of this stuff, and you try to kind of get a metric for how to define it, and you realize there's a ton of overlap in the difference between the best performing barrel and the worst performing barrel out of the exact same lot. We could have been up to like 30%, right? Like the 30% difference in what your expectation was. So instead of trying to chase that fucking demon around, we made it very clear that if you ever shot out a Sons of Liberty barrel, we would just replace it for free. Because the one thing I do know is that it's very fucking hard to do. Okay, and people look at me and they've asked me, even my peers in the industry have asked me, why do you do that? Well, because I'm a real nice guy, and because I have a fucking calculator. If you're the kind of guy that can shoot out one of our barrels, it is in my interest to keep you fucking shooting no matter what, because whether you know it or not, you're a brand ambassador for us. Whether you know it or not, you're selling hundreds of rifles for us because you're the guy that's taking carbine classes every weekend. You're the guy that's like the red shirt on your department. You're the guy that is competing his ass off. You're the guy that people
go on. A shooter.
That guy, well, yeah. That's the guy that people go ask gun advice from. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to keep you shooting no matter what. You get a fucking free barrel and a hat. You know, so the whole barrel thing came down to the fact that, like, and it's hilarious just to read the arguments on the internet about which process is better and what material, or, you know, I will tell you, materials matter. Like a 4150 CMV or the Bill-B-1159, you know, Echo, like that ordnance grade steel, that is actually the difference maker between barrels like Versa 416 stainless. Yeah. Okay. So that ordnance grade steel that is chemically or chemistry is designed, metallurgically designed for thermal erosion resistance. That makes a difference. Okay. When you start getting into the processes of either hammer forge or chrome lining or QPQ or button rifle, blah, 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 whatever, I promise you that it gets pretty spooky on how to determine what that thing is going to do, no matter what it is. Like I said, how long is the barrel? Is it suppressed? What is the cadence of fire? And the truth is that you start to realize that it's the data overlaps. So instead of chasing some of that shit, like, hey, shoot a fucking barrel out, you get a free one, no questions asked.
Yeah, what ammo are you shooting? Shooting high pressure ammo, that bimetal jacket.
Here's
stuff
what I want some people to realize, though, too, because, like, again, I'm just having conversations, and I really do value our end user feedback. We have well over 100,000 Sons of Liberty barrels on the market, out in the world. Well over 100,000. Yeah. Okay. And I'm backing every one of those up with my own money. So you're talking about millions of dollars of me saying, fuck you, shoot it out, bro. If if it was that easy to do, okay?
Yeah, you'd be broke.
Yeah, well, I'd be, you know, yeah, exactly.
It's a lot of barrels.
It's a lot of barrels. Yeah. Well, I'm just saying, like, so I don't, you know, there's internet memes and there's Reddit advice. And then there's a guy sitting here telling you with my own money and my own reputation that I'm backing up over 100,000 barrels with this. Go shoot the fucker. Go shoot it. Go shoot it all you want.
How do you go about selecting your parts and what you're like? Okay, like we're really familiar with like the M89 and M76 rails, right?
Sure.
And that type of stuff and the drive mechanisms that go into holding that on. Like, how did you say this is what I want and this is who I want to get it from?
Yeah, so this is another one of those things that's really misunderstood in the general gun buying public. Like people that know how things work, they understand this, and then you know there's the rest of the people that don't. So just because you know where something is made, that's probably about 10%, okay, of like the equation, because you don't know there's. I don't want to say there's menu options, right? But let's say you're selecting a bolt, okay? Picking the material is one box, okay? And then there's just so much other stuff that you're requiring them to do, okay, that it may or may not be specified from whoever else may use the same OEM. But there's a process to that. Knowing what boxes this thing must check, that it goes, that's one of the, some of the stuff we cover in armorer's courses is into the why, but it's like that for anything. I mean, you're not just slapping a label on something. Okay. You're having somebody make something to either a proprietary standard. Okay. Like the M89s or, you know, the way we oversize a lug on an upper receiver, the way we undersize a threaded bore on an upper receiver. So that press fit barrel, like, you know, so it's an upper receiver, but those dimensions and those tolerances, those prints that you dictate, the anode thickness, the type of all that kind of stuff, right? That's knowing where it's made doesn't tell you very much about
anything. How it's made.
It's just that happens to be true. Same thing with almost every other component. I mean, the level of thought we put into a detent, which is like the most uninteresting thing in the gun, right? True military detents are cadmium, right? Commercial detents are mostly zinc coated. Okay, cadmium is really toxic. You don't see a lot of it in the commercial market, right? That's a spec that's called out, like in the TDP, right? Zinc. Now, if you shoot 300 rounds a year, which is what the average firing schedule is for like most civilian shooters, none of this stuff will ever manifest. Okay, if you are taking carbine courses where you're going from fire to safe, you know, 1,000 times in a weekend, right? And you're wearing that thing down, materials, coatings, that kind of stuff really does start to matter. So, like, we use stainless steel that's QP key coated on a detent to exceed the life of even the cadmium ones, right? Which is a far cry from the zinc ones. Now, if you go into that level of thought for a fucking detent for your selector lever, like, what kind of thought do you think you put into, like, the extractor, you know, or your ejector type, or your the fastener, or the, you know, that's the stuff that's, to me, is always funny. Like, you know, parts apart, you know, no, it's not. And do you know why we've done this? Do you know why? And the average person probably couldn't answer that question, you know, unless they were that type of person to really want to dig that deep into the weeds. But that's why. That's why we use a detent made of that material, coated in that material, you know, coated with that stuff. Because if you are asking your gun to do more than the average shooter, and you need it to survive that constant metal-on-metal wear, okay, and you want that crisp and very positive engagement on there, like, that's how you maintain that over a long period of time. That's a fucking detent. You know, small part springs that we use in, like, a mag catch or takedown pin spring, you know, again, 17/7 wire, because it can be properly heat treated, and because, you know, that is what's going to give you the longest service life on that tiny component. Your rifle's only as good as its shittiest part. Does that make sense? Like, rifles don't fail because your $400 rail fell off. That's not why they fail. Rifles fail because some 30-cent spring was overlooked, or because some detent wasn't done right, or because some fastener broke. That's why guns really actually work and fail. You know, not because of your stock or your Cerakote job or like your fucking super high-speed badass ninja trigger. I mean, actually, fire control groups have a lot to do with why guns work and fail, but not for the reasons that people think. You know, like whenever you select a fire control group, whenever you're looking at that, you want a crisp, clean, predictable break. You want a very positive reset, and you want a fucking sledgehammer coming down to ensure primer detonation, right? There's a lot of triggers on the market that are so focused on being fast that they forget the other half of the equation, and that is ensuring primer detonation. On a race gun, a gamer gun, if you have a failure to detonate a primer, you've lost a couple seconds, you know, having to, you know, cycle a weapon. If that happens when, you know, Cletus is coming through your window at 2 a.m., you know, the stakes are a little bit higher. So whenever we say the fucking thing must work, you know, you're looking at things like guaranteeing primer ignition, even on hard primers. Like, that's the level of thought that goes into stuff that is lost upon a lot of the general gun buying public, you know? And how do you teach them that? Well, I think, number one, they first have to be interested and want to learn, mm-hmm. you know? And then, two, like, it's hard to demonstrate that because, you know, you may fire a weapon, you may run that thing through a 10,000-round firing schedule. And the problems we're talking about may not even manifest within there. Unfortunately, problems typically manifest at the worst opportune time. So, like, I mean, you know, you're trying to demonstrate why you do it this way, and then you always get, well, I've done this, and I've never had a problem. Like, well, that's not, you know.
I'll wait till you do.
Sample size of one, anecdotal, and, you know, and we're going to do our best to make sure you never have that problem.
Another thing that y'all are really big on is like the QC of the components as they come in. So, like, I mean, there's a picture from years ago of like a couple bins of gas tubes. You've got good, you've got bad. Like, you're over there checking each one.
So we do that picture I posted, that's actually from BCM.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah, and I am a BCM fanboy. I would say that BCM was actually one of my inspirations. I think that they are a really true good fighting gun company. No frill, no bullshit, just a straight up gun company, right? But we do the same thing. Our interns here, like, it when someone gets hired here, it takes about 3 months before that we actually turn them loose on their own to do some task. You know, like their first couple of days here, they might be weighing buffers on a postal scale. Because just because it says H2 on there doesn't mean that the dude who assembled it actually put two tungsten weights in there, you know? So weighing those on a postal scale, I mean, sometimes with the better brands, this is not just unique to Sons Liberty, your better performance brands, a lot of times what you're paying for is the shit we throw away, right? The you know, you're sitting there and you have a gauge, you're going in and out of the internal dimension of a gas block. Okay. And it's either pass or fail. And there's, you know, we have very, very tight tolerance on that because a gas block, the way it marries a journal, if that's not efficient, you're going to be hemorrhaging gas there, mm-hmm. right? So, like, you know, not just the diameter, the inside diameter of a gas block, but you're also looking at the actual journal of the barrel, you know, and just because it's spec'd at, you know, 750, anybody that's ever done anything with precision machining knows that that's really not how it works. You know, it could be 7495. Okay, well, so anyways, a part of what you're paying for a lot of times is the amount of stuff that you reject. A gas tube, that flange isn't of the right diameter to create the seal inside the gas key, so you're not hemorrhaging gas and the weapon's efficient. We reject, fuck, dude. I mean, maybe 10% of gas tubes, or maybe 8% of gas tubes. What do you think the rejection rate is like on gas tubes that do not pass our spec?
It's probably 5 to 10%, but they're usually in batches. Like, a whole batch will come in, they're fucked up.
Yeah, Tom's telling me that y'all just sent back a whole bunch of gas tubes.
Yeah. So yeah, it'd be like, am I going to machine gas tubes in house? No, I'm going to have them. I'm going to source them from a place that does a good job typically at doing that, and then we're going to make sure they pass our gauges. You know, we've spent tens of thousands of dollars on these gauges, and, like, you know, a lot of our labor cost is simply gauging shit. That's why whenever you send stuff out, you have a very high degree of confidence in what it's going to do, because before it ever gets to the end user, it's gone through several stages of opportunities to reject. you're not taking something out of a fucking box and putting it in this box. That's not how.
Yeah, that's what most people do. Yeah, we probably reject like gas blocks probably 5 to 10%, and it's kind of figured in when we manufacture them, the tolerances and stuff like that. We check them all, and it's almost easier to check them all and have a few get kicked out than you'd be, you know, if you're going to be, make them slow enough where they're all perfect, they're be astronomically expensive. So, but a lot of companies don't, your chances of getting a bad one are 1 out of 20 or 1 out of 10 because they're not checking them.
Right.
Then we have those gas blocks machined to our print, to our tolerances out of the material that we dictate. Like here's a funny example. We use a 4140 gas block. Okay, we use that material because 4140 at the gas block has the same thermal expansion and contraction rate as the 4150 barrel. You want those things expanding and contracting at the same rate. I see other materials used on gas blocks out there, and some folks might think material X is an upgrade because it's very expensive. They don't realize that it might be heating and expanding at half the rate of your barrel steel, or it's heating and expanding at twice the rate of your barrel steel, and you're creating issues there at that juncture. The level of thought you put into the thermal and expansion and contraction rate of a gas block is something that people don't typically think about.
Yeah, not only that, there's a lot of steel. I mean, obviously, you don't use an aluminum gas block, but even steel gas blocks, a lot of them aren't. Most of them are not 4140. I think us, Roger, a few people use 4140, but most of them are like 8620 or L1214 or something like that. Like, you get a lot of other softer metals in there that they're running because they're easier to make. But I think we're one of the few that I know of on the market that are actually using 4140. Like Mike said, that's real close to the barrel steel.
And you're talking about, I mean, like, that's, you're getting really close to the last thing touching the projectile before it leaves the barrel if it's all contracting and expanding at different
rates. Or you're starting to hemorrhage gas between the block and the journal. And like, remember, that gas you've budgeted to drive the weapon, if it's just being able to escape into the world, you've lost something. When you're pushing that gun, you're asking it to go the extra fucking inch. When you're asking that gun to just go a little further, okay, the more efficient gun is going to get there. It just is. Mm-hmm. You know, like when the gun is dirty or it's dry or your gas rings are worn or there's debris in the raceway or there's other things going on, or it's negative 20 degrees outside and, you know, you test fire your gun at, you know, 80 degrees, you know, like ambient temperature. When you start stacking these variables into that weapon, okay, the more efficient gun is going to push further. It just is. And so you put that level of thought into it. And we're not, and this is the other thing too. You don't come up with the formula based upon getting it to work at some static range under ideal conditions, right? You're thinking of what the gun's going to do when the chip's truly down, when everything's gone to shit and there's a real problem, or you're pushing that gun to its outer edge of its performance envelope. Okay, that's what you're paying for. When you buy a better rifle, you're paying for that last 5%. The last 5% of the performance envelope, that's what you're buying. And that's one of the hardest things to communicate to people whenever they say, oh, you know, you don't need something you do if you want to exceed, you know, the expectation of your adversary, you know, or the other, you know, I mean, and so that's kind of what it is. And that's sometimes, as a rifle maker who gives a shit, that's one of the most frustrating things to try to get across, you know.
So what do y'all have coming up? What's the next big thing for Sunsol?
Colored charging handles coming out probably here in the next couple weeks. We got a bunch of stuff coming down, I think.
The Mark 10s are starting to roll off the line, and those are looking pretty sweet.
And those will get even – we're doing more of those, and we'll keep cranking those out through next year. And then some point next year, probably by the summer, there will actually be a new generation of those coming out. So,
oh, very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love our new charging handles, man. You know, we built them with suppressed use in mind.
Let's talk about the LCH a little bit.
Yeah.
That new charging handle that y'all just came out with.
So, again – every year we start. Every year we kind of bring a few processes a little bit more under our control, and we saw in this application, this was a good opportunity because I did want to create a seal in the back of that upper, not just for our guns, but for any rifle you throw that into. It is going to interrupt some of that gas, you know, coming back to the shooter. And this is, you can throw that charging handle into any rifle, and I think it's going to probably improve the shooter experience in that. Very, very tough. We want it to be, you know, obviously it's an ambidextrous charging handle. We want it to be able to get a good purchase on that thing, but not be so large where it's snagging on gear, or it's, you know, it's, you know, we've put a little bit of thought into the ergonomics of that thing. You know, now with the charging handle, where you're not necessarily reinventing the wheel, but you can just find a few practical things to, you know, I mean, improve things a little bit incrementally, right? And it also helps us to streamline and kind of keep, put our efforts into being able to meet some of that demand. The demand far exceeds our ability to produce. Bringing some of these processes into house is, you know, just makes sense of the evolution of the brand.
Yeah, for sure.
What do you have coming up that's not actually physical in nature, like gun-wise? What do you have coming up? I know for a fact that you've been talking to a couple of my buddies.
Yes.
From my neck of the woods.
Yes. When is this going to air?
This is going to air after the first announcement.
Okay. Yeah. So, yeah, we're really, really super excited about this. I'm going to be a little bit vague, dude, but I got to tell you, I have not been this excited for a gun event in the entire time I've been in the industry. Like, this is like the whole reason all of us are in the industry, and all the end users out there that are like super, like the super end users, yeah, right? We all have the same pedigree in terms of like the movies we used to love to watch and the characters and like the personalities, the humor of like that culture. And we're getting to do something that I think is just fucking awesome.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. We're actually filming for that tomorrow. So yeah, I think.
Yeah, I was kind of upset that I wouldn't run into him down here.
Yeah, I'm so excited, dude. I'm
already planning outfits and guns.
I got my nicest tracksuit ready to go.
I was trying to figure out how we could do a podcast episode while we're there.
Oh, God.
Because that's like, there's going to be a ton of people there. And I was almost going to be like, hey, dude, we got to find like an 80s van and record the podcast in the 80s van.
You just do it out like Brett, you know, like they do like game day, just out like on a stage and just see all the people.
That's another idea.
Carrying RPGs and shit.
It's going to be cool. And they've done a great job with their events. When we saw you out at, I'm going to say Clash Bash, because they're going to figure that out by the time this airs.
Yeah.
When I saw you out at Clash Bash on social, I was like, uh-oh, what's going to happen
Something's
here?
Cooking.
Because this is going to be good. And I'm really excited for it because, one, it's in our backyard. It's at the ranch. We're going to have a lot of fun with
it. That facility is amazing, just to see how much Shockey has done out there. Oh, yeah,
because you've been out there when it was just, you know, just one range.
I went out there with Scott. Yeah, it was just that one little shack and it was a house. And like, I mean, well, I don't even know if I'd call it a range.
And then
there's a dirt pile.
But now I see it really is, I think, becoming one of the coolest places in the country to go shoot, to have an event. That's where we have our carbine series, which are, you know, our carbine series sold out again.
We have our multi-gun match out there.
Yeah.
A few days after the what's going on.
Yeah. You know, and so I look at that place, and it's just amazing what it's become and what it is. I mean, that's probably right. If you haven't been there, you know, you got to like the long range, and just imagine, you know, steel like as far as you can see, and then of course all of these, you know, all of these bays that you have true ability to get mobile and to do some fun stuff, and it's just over and over and over, and it's just really cool.
Yeah, guys. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks.
Thanks for inviting
us
down.
They didn't come out.
Thanks for inviting us. I said inviting us down.
I said coming out.
Oh yeah.
No, I'm glad. I'm super glad you guys came, man. It's always a good time. Ike and we kind of have our trajectories have been pretty similar, man. We started around the same time. Mm-hmm. We've always like supported each other, and you're definitely one of my favorite people in the industry to work with. And
I appreciate that.
Yeah, it's true. And I mean, just the way you take care of your customers, you have the same philosophy as just, hey, make this dude happy. And, and so it's really cool to see what you've built as well, Ben.
Yeah, I remember, I think the first time was at Making Bacon back in the
day. Oh, yeah.
And I was like, oh, we got a donation Tommy's for Making House. Bacon from Big Tech's Outdoors. I'm like, the hell's that? And I mean, that was a long time ago.
Yeah.
I wish we could do Making Bacon again. But it's just
like, we were just talking about this last night, man. Like, there's really, like, that was so much. Are there any big machine gun shoots? Even Knob Creek is gone, right?
What?
Even Knob Creek.
Yeah, I think they had their last one.
Yeah.
It's just so hard. I mean, even that place we had it the last time, I'm surprised we didn't kill a cow or something. Like, we were like shooting down into a hole, but if you went like this, I was like, oh, shit.
I would edit that part out.
Yeah.
We'll edit that one out.
It's been long enough.
Now, well, cool, guys. Thank you so much for having us, man.
Yeah, thanks for having us. We're here.
Oh, yeah, we're on your show, man.
We didn't even bring the. We didn't bring our background. I was like, no, we're going to take the. We're going to show off the tavern.
Good really experience. Yeah,
really appreciate it.
But yeah, so sendsoflibertygunworks.com or gw.com.
SOLGW.com is probably the easiest one to type in.
Yeah. Google Sons of Liberty. You can find it. Instagram, Facebook for now.
As of right now.
As of right now. Oh, shit.
Yeah.
But yeah, thanks for coming on. We really appreciate it. And if y'all could like, subscribe, share this, all that kind of stuff, tell us how awesome we are. And it really helps us out in the ratings and everything and getting the podcast out there. But
we currently have a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts, which I'm really excited about, but only one person has actually took the time to write a review. So how about y'all go out and actually write a review on Apple Podcasts? Please do it. You might get a gift card.
Y'all take care.